Are we good to go?
Yeah, we got it recording now.
Okay.
So, I have a couple of questions to ask you about my project. It's called the Memory Project.
Oh, uh-huh.
And basically what we do, we interview someone, like our grandma or great-grandma, and so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wanted to interview you about basically like the Great Depression and World War II and stuff.
Oh,
I have some questions and stuff.
Yeah.
Well,
I haven't ever had a concussion. I'll be 95 in June.
Okay.
And my mind is still working, I think, relatively good. I have many, many memories of my childhood and what I did when I went to school. I played piano. I started taking piano lessons when I was 7 and played through school. I was the pianist. I used to accompany most of the entertainers, dancers, singers, musicians, and played in the school orchestra. And when I went to Grover Cleveland High School, then I was their absolutely total pianist for everything. I played the school marches, played in the orchestra, and when I graduated, they asked my mom if I could go back as a postgraduate because they were desperate to have a piano player, and evidently there didn't happen to be any other piano players in our whole class. Could you believe that? And then my mom says no, she had to get a job. So when I left school after graduation, I had 17 young children in the neighborhood that I taught piano lessons to. Until I married, and I tried to teach my children, but they were not willing to practice, and it's a matter of practicing. You have to, basically, in order to remember where the keys are, what notes are where, and be able to read music, you do have to pay attention, and I think their interest wasn't there. But I have continued to do this, and I know music is essential to everyone's life. I mean, it brings joy, and it's something that I enjoy for myself. It's my way of expressing my emotions. I just sometimes, if I'm in a sad mood, it helps me get out of the mood. And as I say, I volunteered at a nursing home after my husband passed away. That would be your great-grandfather. And I still play piano, but I had to stop volunteering because I have no way of getting there. I have to impose on my children to get me back and forth. But I play at home for my own entertainment, and that's what I do.
Okay, well, and there's a couple specific questions, too, so let's start with that.
Yeah.
It said, where have you lived during your lifetime?
I was born in Buffalo. I can remember where we lived. I was a toddler, and I have multiple pictures of me at being 3 years old on 7th Street in front of School 3. One of my older cousins was a school teacher there, and my mom and dad had rented an apartment next door to where my grandmother lived on 7th Street. So those are my early remembrances, but then I had a sister born, and at that time my dad had bought a home on Rhode Island Street in Buffalo, and we moved to that. He had a shoe repair business, and we had a lovely home on Rhode Island Street, and I lived there until I got married. Went to school 77 and then to Grover Cleveland High School. So that's basically what I did when I was just a teenager until I left school.
So the next question is, can you describe your neighborhood?
The neighborhood that I lived in? It was awesome. We had some fantastic neighbors, and we knew all the neighbors at that time. We could, you could visit with a neighbor. Yeah, they would come in and have, you know, tea or that. We knew all the neighbors' children. We all, because we all went to school together, and the mothers all knew the mothers, each other mother, and it was a very safe, comfortable neighborhood. My dad had planted a fruit tree in our backyard, and then our neighbor had a pear tree, so we used to exchange fruit off of our trees. And I did remember so many of the mothers, because they were gentle and kind, and they would ask you in or maybe bake cookies and ask you, you know, you want some cookies. It was a friendly neighborhood. But today, I have been totally devastated at the sight of our street, the home that my dad bought, paid for, and had remodeled, was gone. It was sold after my father passed away, and the people who bought it were intending to renovate it and do things to it, and they left for a vacation, and when they came back, somebody got into the property and stripped it of all the important things, the wainscoting wood in the dining room, the stained glass window in the dining room, the fireplace that was there. They took each and everything in the basement, all the furnaces, all the plumbing and copper that they could, and literally stripped the house. So when they came back from their vacation, they just torched it, and now it's a big empty lot. And that's how my neighborhood is now. And there's more empty lots on Rhode Island Street between Normal and Plymouth. Those are the two side streets that we had. So it's not a happy place to go to anymore, but I'm glad I have a picture that was made into a puzzle that my nephew had made for me to put together, and I have it in a frame so that I have a remembrance of the house that we lived in. And that's about it about, yeah. So, but I have not been down. We lived on 15th Street after I was married, and I saw the neighborhood was changing. We had a very friendly neighborhood. 15th Street, between York and Connecticut, had 56 children. That's how many children were on that one block. And if I tell you, my husband had five sisters, and the five sisters married a neighbor's son. I had five brother-in-laws that were all off of that block of 15th Street, if you could believe that. And if I could tell you, today there isn't one of them that's alive. And the street, I haven't been down there in years because I lost my husband. Your grandfather, which would be your grandma's dad, passed away. And I waited until Aunt Cindy was 18 before I remarried. And that's when I married my second husband. And then my life got better. He took care of me and was a great... He was a great grandpa to all of my grandchildren. And that's it. So after I lost him, I played piano, and I knew that so many people that have dementia or Alzheimer's they're isolated, but they love music. My sister used to tap dance, and I would play for her when she'd do her dance routines because it would entertain my dad. So when I saw her after my second husband passed away, I played for her, and broke out into a real happy smile. She was so happy to hear the music. And I said, why aren't they providing music here? So I couldn't stay there with her. I had to come back naturally to Buffalo. And I volunteered at a nursing home here because I knew that the people that were there also would enjoy the music. So I've done that for this past 10 years. And now I'm unhappy because I've been injured and I can't go back to doing what I like to do. That's about it, honey.
I'm sorry.
No. Well, I'm old, and that's, you know, it's hard to accept that. When your brain is still active and you have all these memories of everything that you've done and the friends that I've lost, and I will tell you, I was very active in our school, and I was active with our alumni group. We were a great group of people that got together on a regular basis after we graduated, and even when we celebrated different anniversaries. And they, all these friends that I went to school with and knew so well, they've all gone. They're all, they passed on, and those that I have not seen, I expect are in health facilities. But I've been blessed that I haven't had any mental issue. So I remember each and every one of my grandchildren and my great-grandchildren. I know all of you. Well, I see you, and I'm happy to see you because it reminds me of this is what I started, what I brought into the world. And it's been, I've had a fulfilling life. It just seems like I want it to go on, but I'm not really able to do and get involved with things. I would love to. My health is preventing that because my body is, my activity is limited, you know? But that's it, honey. I'm grateful that I have so many wonderful great-grandchildren and grandchildren, and I love each and every one of you.
Thank you. We love you, too.
I love you. Okay. I just want you to be a good boy. I know that you are, and you're doing well in school, and I'm happy that you're in my life, too.
Same here.
Okay.
So, yeah, there's a bunch more.
Oh,
so,
okay.
Did the roles of boys and girls differ in your family?
Did the what?
Did the roles of boys and girls differ in your family?
The roles? You mean what they chose to do?
Yeah, were the boys expected to do more things than the girls, or vice versa?
Well, I was the oldest of five children, and my mother had a baby later in life, and that was my younger brother, who I was 17 years old when he was born, so I was basically his second mom. The girls were always expected to take care of the younger children, and I had that assignment when I was growing up. I basically was more my mother's right arm, I guess you'd say, because I had four other siblings. So when you're the oldest, then your responsibility is just like dictated, you know. But my brothers had I don't know if they had chores, because we did. The girls were kind of responsible for just keeping everything orderly and clean, and the boys would, you know, go out and play ball or whatever. Now, I don't know. I mean, things are a little bit different. I think it's not right that the girls should always have to be the ones to worry. Well, the boys would go out and shovel snow, but by that time, honey, understand that I was the firstborn, and then I had two sisters, and then I had a brother. So that put him, when I was like 13 years old, he was just born. So you wouldn't expect, my two sisters and I babied our baby brothers, like, you know, because they were like our responsibility, because my mother was not always well either. So, but I don't know that my dad ever made, my dad did more of the things to maintain the, you know, the male role in the house, you know, as far as like, but we used to not have to worry about shoveling snow or anything like that, because my dad would take care of that. But we always had to worry about washing all the windows. I can remember my sister and I, that was our chore. We'd take turns. We had a two-story house. We couldn't go do up the upstairs windows, but we could do all the ones on the first floor. And we'd take turns. One would be outside and the other one would be inside, and we would wash the windows together. And the house had lots of windows, so. But we did that, and we had to vacuum, and we had to dust, and we had to do basically all the things that women are supposed to do when they're, you know, when they're keeping house. But my mother wasn't always well, so we just assumed her role of responsibility. That was all in my youth, you know. But I had five children, and the girls, because Maureen, who was your grandmother, was my firstborn, and then I had my son Peter, who was spoiled and pampered by his dad and his grandfather, and really excused from having any responsibility. My daughters have always been the ones that have looked after every need that I've ever had. I can't say that about my son Justin, who is my younger son. He was there to do whatever I needed to have done when the girls weren't available. And he's lovable, and he's a dear boy, and now he's got daughters who are grown and living out in New York City. So I guess I think it was always expected that the girls were supposed to take care of the home, and we just did it, you know. And my daughters were very, you know, they were there. They did whatever. When their father passed away, I can remember Aunt Barbara was just, I think, probably 11 or 12, maybe not that old even, and I had to go to work, naturally, to support us. And she was on her hands and knees when I came home from work, and she said, I can't seem to get the floor clean, Mom. And I said to her, well, you just have to use a little more elbow grease, honey. And she says, where do we keep it? Thinking it was some kind of a cleaner or something. Anyway, I saw them grow up. They took courses of study. Aunt Barb wanted to be a beautician, and Aunt Cindy wanted to go to college. And Maureen had wanted to be a nurse, and she went to nursing school. And then she met and married your grandfather, and she actually, they divorced. And after that, I just had to depend on my girls until I met my second husband, who was Ted, everybody called him Pa, or Uncle Ted. And he and I were married for almost 25 years, and he passed away. So my life has had highs and lows, and a lot of wonderful memories and multiple loving family. That was what I was blessed with. So my children always were devoted and caring. And that, now I don't know if you have any other questions.
The next one is, were there any coming of age ceremonies or significant events?
No, I can't say that. They were confirmed, and then we'd have every occasion, you know, graduations, first communions, confirmations, all that. We honored all that when their father was alive. But then after he died, they were naturally grown. They were teenagers, and they were doing, and I was always working after he passed away. He died only when he was only 42 years old. So I had to work. And I had to work, the girls were basically taking a course. Aunt Cindy went to UB, and Cindy and Aunt Barb took a hairdressing course. And basically, there were no special occasions until they got married, and then their stepfather, who was Ted, everybody called him Pa, he gave him away in marriage and was a great stepdad for them. All of my grandchildren at that point now had was a step grandpa, but he was wonderful. He was like a real dad. I mean, he never had any children, and he was happy to have a family. So, but I can't say that he gave both of the girls away in marriage. He walked them down the aisle, and he was there all. Every time he was needed, he was always the one they turned to.
Well, the next one is, what music, clothing, food, games, etc. were popular when you were young?
What was that, honey?
It said, what music, clothing, food, games, etc. were popular when you were young?
Oh, gosh, when I was young, honey, I was taking piano lessons at the age of 7, and I was not allowed to learn to play anything that was popular. I had to learn all the classics. I had to memorize them. And as a matter of fact, while I was going to school at that time, I performed in school, but it was all, we were not allowed to sing or play. We had school orchestra, and you had to play marches and, you know, patriotic songs in the school orchestra. But what I had to play on the piano, if I was ever going to play for anybody, it had to be a classic, and it was like either Rachmaninoff or Schubert or any of them, Claude Debussy, I would say the more famous composers, and that's what I grew up with. And when I started to change my music was after I had children, because I was teaching other young children how to play the classics, and they wanted to learn how to play popular music. And they were, if their parents wanted them to learn, they had to learn what I was teaching them. But I don't recall that we had fun songs in our, you know, like popular music at that time. The only thing I know is my dad had favorite Italian songs that I would play for him. But that was it. You know, because I was expected to. So.
Okay. Well, The next one is describe your education, for example, like the buildings, the classroom, the teachers, the subjects offered, like the homework load and that stuff.
Well, I went to grammar school. It was a new school. School 77 was built. It was only a block away from us, and we had elderly teachers who were not very tolerant. At that time, there was a lot of immigrants coming to this country, and these were elderly teachers who were not tolerant of Italian children because we were made to feel unequal, I would say. They mocked us, they ridiculed us, and one teacher one day said something horrible, that we should all go back to Ethiopia to the class. So that was the attitude that they showed us when I was growing up and going to grammar school. Well, when I went to high school, my classroom teacher was 80 years old, and here we are, young teenage girls, 13 years old, going into high school, and the teachers were all older. They were very severe, strict. There was a lot of homework we had to do. I mean, they assigned you to whatever course of study you were in. I took a secretarial course. That's what I thought I wanted to be, and I used to type and do shorthand and all that. As a matter of fact, I was a secretary after I graduated, and I did get a job. I worked at Jane Addam & Company for the treasurer there. I was secretary, and I hated having to type. Because my fingers wanted to play the piano, and typing was just not. It wasn't making music. That's why I just hated it, having to sit at a typewriter just to see notes on paper. So, but that was basically what I endured in school until I graduated.
Okay, so the next one is, what were the rules at home and consequences for breaking them?
Oh, my mother was she enjoyed having us wait on her, and if we ever talked back, you got cracked across the mouth. And it was she was not very loving, I could say that. She was very strict with us. We didn't have a lot of happy times with our mother.
I'm sorry.
Well, that's the way it was, honey. You know, I'm 90 years old, and you go back that many years and remember what you lived with and did during your childhood. That's the kind of parenting they did back then. I mean, it was either that or you got strapped, and we took many strappings. Just if you even if you looked at her funny or didn't respond the way she wanted you to, you were punished and or denied something if you wanted something. You never I know that they were more, my parents were more generous with my younger siblings, and they felt that I was older and I didn't need to have any, you know, like I didn't get any toys. I don't ever remember getting any toys or anything like that. The last Christmas present that I got when I was going to school was a fountain pen. That was what I got for Christmas, and my sisters who were younger had things, doll things and stuff. So, but
okay. So the next question is: describe the jobs that you held throughout your lifetime.
The jobs that I had. The first one, very first job I had was as an usherette at the Circle Theater on Connecticut Street.
The Circle Theater?
It was a Circle Theater on Connecticut Street and 15th Street. And I went and asked if they had They were hiring and they needed usherettes, and I used to have to wear a uniform and usher people down to their seats in the dark for the afternoon matinees and Sunday, and then two or three nights a week. And that was the first job I had. And I left that and got a job at Jan Adam & Company working for the buyer of housewares. He needed a secretary. And then I elevated to secretary to the treasurer while I was working there. That was after I was married and had two children.
Okay.
And those were the jobs I had until I married your deceased grandfather. And then he wanted to have a business. And then after that, I worked in the dry cleaning business with him and had to do laundry of customers' white things and repairs, put in zippers and pockets and all that kind of stuff in men's trousers, and repair tears and what have you. But that was it until he passed away, and I sold business to my brother-in-law because I didn't want to have anything to do with the dry cleaning business anymore. And that's it. That was my last job doing it. After that, I attended bar for I don't remember how many years. That's where I met my second husband, and he was a customer who came in regularly. And I got to know better and asked me to marry him, and I did. And that was who my children called Pa. That was Ted.
Oh. Hold on. I'm just writing this down.
Huh?
I'm just writing down what you just said.
Oh. Okay. And I miss him because he was really a great man, a lovable man. He thought the world of my children, and he was happy to have a family. And what can I say? I was married to he treated me very, very well. He had season tickets to the Buffalo Bills game for years. We went to the games. We traveled. We went to Florida every winter because his parents lived down in Florida, and we go to visit them, and I went to his 50th alumni reunion in New Jersey, and he came to mine up here when our graduating class celebrated their 50th year of being out of school, and I was secretary of our alumni group, getting them on a regular basis. We would meet and just reminisce and enjoy a luncheon together. And we did that for many, many years, and I would say up till about 4 or 5 years ago when several of them were, some had passed away, but those that were not capable of driving anymore, they went into health facilities because of their health too, so I think all of my classmates that I used to be with on a regular basis are all deceased now. That's why I say I think I'm lucky now that I'm still around. But the Lord will decide when I go too. So.
Okay. So the next question is, what did you like about the job?
The job that I loved was waiting on people at a bar, because when you go into a bar and you're serving people, which I all my life seemed like I was helping or doing something for somebody, serving people that were enjoying the beverage and being able to talk to adults and being in a friendly, happy atmosphere, that was the thing that made me survive and keep a happy frame of mind And I enjoyed it. I met many, many people. I got to meet so many people. They'd bring their wives in and got to be my friends extended because they, the gentlemen that would come in on their work breaks or for lunches or whatever would come in and say, oh, I want you to meet my wife. And that would be the day I would work on a Sunday. They would come in and bring in their wives. And it was it was really awesome. And that's how where I met Uncle Ted, my second husband. He was one of the men who used to come in. He worked construction and used to come in for lunch. And that's where I met him. And I would say, yeah, that was the happiest job. And it made me the most money because I didn't drink. And they left me good tips. And if you're sociable and you're respectful and you behave like a lady, I didn't tolerate any profanity. They knew it. I didn't tolerate any kind of, you know, well, men, when they start drinking, get ugly and nasty. And I kept it under control. And because I was quick and they got good service, they appreciated that and they respected me. And that was it. I would say of all the things I've ever done in my life, that was the most joyful. But it was after I lost my husband, I didn't want to do that anymore. I have not had to work. He provided for me, and I don't need to go out and get a job now.
Okay, so the next question is, what did you not like about the job?
I don't say that there was anything about it. That job was it was a fun job. When you're facing a whole, I mean, you probably have never been in at a bar because you're too young, of course. But if you ever see people in a movie or on television, you'll see people sitting in a bar and it's friendly. And there's been television programs where people are sitting at a bar having a cocktail or a beer or whatever. People are in a happy frame of mind, and it's the atmosphere is happy. I mean, it's not a sad place to be, because I've been spent enough time being unhappy and sad, and that I'd say that was the best thing I ever did in my life, and I did that for all the years that it took until I met my husband and married him, and he said he did not want a working wife, and that's when I quit.
Okay. So the next question is, did you have any dangerous or life-threatening experiences?
Let's see. Well, when I was a child, I almost drowned at the beach. My uncle thought he had me under his arms, and I went down, and they had to pump me to get the water out of my... But that was the only thing I ever could remember that was scary or life-threatening or anything like that. No. I've never been really into any like dangerous situations. I've been driving all these years and I've never had any problems. So, but that's it.
Okay. So the next one is, what were some important news events that you remember? What was your reaction?
Important news when they decided that we were going to go into World War II, and all the young men that I went to school with had to go into the service. It was heartbreaking because a lot of those young men were killed in action.
I'm sorry.
Well, that's how it is. I mean, the country goes to war, and I was lucky. My husband, Ted, was in the war, the Korean War. He was in the Navy, and he was, you know, on a ship for a long time out at sea. And this was at the end of World War II, I think. And he was in the Korean War, too. He was in the Navy. He joined the Navy when he was 18 years old, when he got out of school. So he spent a good part of his life in, you know, in the military. Played trumpet in the Navy band. And, we had mutual interest in music, so that's why we were kind of attracted to each other, because
Was this the first husband or the second one?
No, that was my second husband.
Okay. Okay, so the next one is, what wars did you experience directly or indirectly? Describe how they affected you.
What war? The worst one.
Yeah, what wars?
It was mainly World War II, because we were on rationed. People were getting provisions like sugar and buttermilk, flour, just so that you could bake bread and survive. And we were, I can always remember my dad being Italian. We used to have a lot of greens, and you got to know that you could survive by, my mother used to make pasta, you know, homemade pasta, and we took that, and you made your own bread and a whole bunch of stuff like that. But that's what I remember. The wars, that was the main, most damaging one, I think, that affected my life anyway.
Okay. And the next one is, did you or your family own a car? If so, describe it.
I own a car. No, it's a Cadillac, and my husband always had a Cadillac. When I used to have a Chevy, and when I married him, he said, you don't need that car, give it to the girls, because I was marrying him and moving into his apartment, and I had a house on 15th Street where Aunt Barbara and Aunt Cindy lived, and he said, give them your car, which was a Chevy. And I have a Cadillac, and I've had a Cadillac ever since.
So you had the Chevy first, then the Cadillac?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, the next one is there a family story or family event that stands out in your memory? If so, explain.
Family event? My daughter Maureen at your grandmother's wedding, the first of my children to get married. And it was a lovely, lovely wedding. It was an afternoon reception. And I was so happy when she told me she was going to have a baby. And that was your Uncle Jim. He was my very first grandchild. And that was one of the happiest things in my life.
Now the next questions I'm going to ask you are questions that I made up, because we have to make our own two questions.
Mm-hmm.
And these are the last two, so.
Okay.
Oh, wait, no, never mind. We have a couple more after it, but only a couple. So, the first one is, what was it like in the Great Depression?
Well, that was a time when people were having their homes taken over by the bank because they couldn't pay the mortgage. Some people were trying to hang on to it by just paying the interest on the mortgage payment, so that they wouldn't lose the home. It was very, very there were so many people on our street that lost their homes to the banks. And people were really poverty stricken. I mean, you had to basically survive by your own ingenuity. My mother used to make all the foods that we had. My dad would go out and pick garden greens, you know, that were edible, and she would cook a pasta and make bread, and she would, we would get potatoes. You'd call it a welfare community where you could get sugar or if you needed flour or anything that you could make, bake with. And she always used to make bread, our own bread, and then she would use some of the dough and make fried dough, you know, and she would make potato soup and cut up whatever greens that she had. But that's basically how we survived.
So dry beans,
she would soak them and then bake them. We'd have baked beans and she'd send me to the store and say, ask the butcher to give you a big meat bone. That would be the part, you know, with some scraps of meat on it. And she would put that in a huge pot and let it cover it with water, and that would make stock, beef stock. And then she would put vegetables in it and macaroni that she would make and put it in that, and that's what we used to eat. We used to have greens all the time, greens and beans. She would throw beans in it. It was, that's how you survived.
So you didn't lose your house?
No. No, my dad was very proud when he paid the last mortgage payment on our house. And I had my nephew had a puzzle of the picture of our house made, and that's what I put together. I have it framed just to remind me that my dad struggled to buy that house on what he earned. And he was a shoe repairman and shoemaker. And
so you said that, like, your neighbors lost all their houses. Did they ever, like, come back?
I don't remember, honey. After I moved out of the neighborhood, I lost touch because the neighborhood changed. People were moving away, and I haven't been back on the west side of Buffalo all these years. I have no desire to see it. It has totally been destroyed. A whole different element of people, and it's just not a neighborhood anymore. All it is a house and an empty lot and another empty lot, and I don't know who's living there, and I don't even want to know. So that's it.
Okay. Well, the next question is, what was it like in World War II? And what I meant by that was, like, were you scared? Were you afraid you're going to lose, or?
Well, we all prayed because we had lost a lot of service people. As I told you, all the young men that I went to school with, several of them were killed in action. And that was heartbreaking. I mean, when you heard of a friend getting killed in the war, it was frightening. Everyone worried that we wouldn't win the war, but when we did, we got the Italians and the French and the British joined us in that combat. We had multiple wars. We had when the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor and started the whole thing, and then Germany did what they did to the Polish people there and to the Jews. That was World War II. We had two or three wars that almost were going on at the same time. It seemed like we were going through a horrible time in our history, and I don't even like to think back on it because there was so much sadness. I mean, you'd hear of a family losing a son over there, and it was just, it was heartbreaking. It was just terrible. And we, when we finally ended that war, because we did get help from other countries, we didn't have to do it alone. When the Japanese attacked us, all the Japanese people that were living in the United States were all rounded up and put into camps out in California because they didn't trust the Japs anymore. I mean, it was a very bad time. You didn't know who you could trust. That was basically how it was. And then, of course, Mussolini, who was the president or the man in charge of Italy, joined the Germans, and they killed him. And we managed to get rid of Hitler and Mussolini and all our enemies, and we won the war. But it's just been turmoil in Europe ever since, because countries were cut up and divided, and they got rid of Czechoslovakia. There were a lot of different, when I looked at the map of the world and see the countries that are obliterated, I mean, different leaders took possession of area and called it their space, their territory. There's names of countries over there that I don't recognize because that was not how I learned what the earth looked like when I used to look at the map of the world. It just, everything is different. It's a whole different world now, so.
Okay, so one quick question, too. When Mussolini joined the Germans, since
yeah.
you were Italian, did that,
yeah.
like, affect your family? Like, was that...
Well, we were proud because we lived here in America, and we hated the fact that the Italians got involved, but they did it for their own survival. But I feel for the people who were left behind there that had to endure. I mean, they didn't want to be fighting a war. But the Italian people are not, they're not aggressive. They're not, they were not looking to get territory and to be slaughtering people. And that was, it made you angry that we were even involved in it. And it made you feel embarrassed to be Italian at that time. And I can remember that after that, when I was going to school, there was a school teacher who had to change his name. His name is Mr. Carrier, but his name, real name was Carriero. And he said in order for them to even consider him, he had to say his name was Carrier. They were prejudiced against Italians. And the Italians were good people. I mean, they'd been their builders. They were capable of many things. And to me, I just couldn't understand that. That they had this hatred against the Italians. And as I said, when we were in school, the teachers were disrespectful of the Italians. And that's why when you say nationalities, I have nothing against any nationality. I mean, I just, the only, even the Germans, I mean, I knew, there were kids going to school that were German. You didn't know what your heritage was when you were going to school. You didn't question people. But our Grover Cleveland High School was all from the West Side, and it was mostly Italian. So, I mean, that's who basically were your friends, you know. So, but I don't think anybody ever mistreated me because I was Italian, you know. I didn't have anybody ever insult me or anything like that. I just, if you're even-minded, if you are fair-minded, you understand that your nationality has nothing to do with your behavior, but how you, what you believe and how you behave and conduct yourself in your life. It should not have any bearing on how you live, you know. You have to just be thoughtful and considerate and have respect for other people, because we're all human beings. We all come from the same God. We're just basically, you know, we.
Yeah.
That's the way it should be. And I don't understand this battle that our president has against Islam. We have a lot of people of that religion here in the country, been here for a long time, and he wants everybody that has a religion of that nature to leave. I mean, this whole political thing is ridiculous. Anyway, I don't get into politics, but I think we have a wrong president right now.
Yeah, so a couple more questions. Did you travel to interesting places? Like, what did you see and experience when
okay,
you were there?
Well, as I said, we, because we had season tickets to the Buffalo Bills, we went to the Super Bowl, to the four Super Bowls, and to the combat. I went to California. I have my brother and sister lived out there. We visited out there. I went to my husband in New Jersey, his school, New Rutherford, New Jersey. He graduated from that. I went to his school reunion. Those are the places. And Florida. Every winter we went to Florida. So I've never been on a boat to go outside of the United States. I've been in Mexico. I went on a vacation to, I can't even think of it, down in Mexico. I can't think of it, down the southern tip of Mexico. It was a resort, and I went on a vacation with a friend. That was after my first husband passed away. But that's it. I mean, I got to see the United States, so that I went to the Grand Canyon. I've been to the South. I've been, you know, had relatives that lived in Florida that we visited regularly. And I think that was, I've been up to Canada, as far north as way up north. We went on a vacation up there with other couples when my first husband was alive. We were like four couples that went up to this. It was like a resort place. But other than that, that was it.
Hold on. I'm just going through a couple of things right now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm dragging off a couple more questions.
Okay.
Okay, so one last question, then we're done.
Mm-hmm.
So what was life in Western New York like when you were young?
What was Western New York like?
Yeah.
Well, I thought, you know, when you're a child and you have friends, and first of all, you have brothers and sisters, and you have good neighbors, and it was fun. We used to roller skate in the street, you know, around the block on our skates. You could go next door, and your neighbor would say, you want some hot chocolate, you want some cookies, or, you know, would you like an apple or a pear off the tree? It was friendly. We had good neighbors. There were no neighborhood fights. You didn't have anybody that you argued with. There were no, I would say, I think it was a mixed neighborhood. We didn't have any blacks in the neighborhood at that time. They had their own area on the other side of the city. So we never had, the problem started when they started integration of schools, and when they decided to do that, forced busing. I became very, very involved because they wanted us to send our children on a bus over to the east side of Buffalo in a Fillmore High School or whatever school it was, because they wanted to integrate the schools. They felt that the black children were not getting proper education. They were being denied the same opportunities that we white children were. We had no blacks living in our neighborhood. And then this judge or whoever just made the decision that they were going to bus us there, or the black children would be bused to our school. And I was PTA president of School 38 for two terms. And when that issue came up, I visited each and every parent and got their signature if they owned their home in the West Side, and told them, went to a Board of Education meeting when the superintendent of schools was conducting at City Hall, and handed them a list of all the names of the people who own their homes on the West Side. I said, if you enforce this, each and every one of these families will boycott your school. They will not send their children to school.
So they sent the buses to a different neighborhood?
So they did not. They then reversed it. Instead of sending our white children over into the black neighborhood, they bused all the black children to the West Side, because that's when we started getting all the problems. They resented that. They didn't want that either. I could understand that. I said, why does it have to be? Why can't they, if they're happy in their neighborhood, let them go to school where they live? People buy houses in a neighborhood that has a school around the corner. You're not going to put them on a bus to go across town to go to school. So that was what my problem was. I could not understand this. So we went to multiple meetings with the Board of Education, and we were on television arguing our position. And I spoke to the superintendent of schools. I said, I am telling you, you enforce this, and every one of these families' names, who I had a long sheet of all the homeowners, would not send their children to school. And the Board of Education gets, you know, they are paid for the number of children that you have in school. And they changed the program. They said, well, all right, then the blacks on the other side of town would then be the ones to be bused. Well, that was what started the whole issue of racial intolerance. Because then they resented having to be treated that way, and they behaved badly. When they came into our neighborhoods, then they became destructive, and that's where it all started. And that was the issue of busing. And I said that was the worst thing that they ever decided to do, is to bus children away from their area into a strange area that they didn't want to be in. And I was, as I said, president of our PTA, and the teachers had to deal with these black children who were disruptive, who were disobedient, who behaved in a horrible manner. They used foul language. They did not represent the kind of behavior that we were used to in our school. But that's how that all came about. So, but that I could say I had a lot to do with, because I was my mom was not a troubleshooter, but you, when you are supporting something because you're against it, I think that influences people and makes people see the right and the wrong of things, you know?
Yeah, well, that was all the questions that
Grandma
I have.
Grandma Maureen mentioned something.
Oh. Oh, hold on. Apparently Grandma Morin said something.
About how Grover Cleveland High School wanted you to stay a fifth year even though you had graduated just so they had a piano player?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
They called my mother and asked her if I could please come back as a postgraduate. And my mother said, are you out of your mind? She's got to get a job. I mean, you know, things were pretty tight back then. My dad was just a shoe repairman, and she wanted me to get a job that was paying, and going back to school was not going to pay me. So, but that's, yeah. She said, I'm happy that you would like her service, but she's got to work. And they thought, you know, that they could have me there as a pianist because they needed someone to play the piano. And I did it for 4 years as a student. I got called out of my shorthand class more times just to go and rehearse or practice in the auditorium because the band was playing or someone was rehearsing or program or whatever they had going on. And that's how I spent my time at Grover.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you for the time that you've done doing this.
Well, I told you just about everything I could think that you might want to know, but that's basically what I remember from my life, honey. And I hope it answered a lot of your questions.
Yeah, it did a lot, like a lot.
He took a lot of notes,
good.
Graham.
Huh?
3 pages.
3 pages? Oh, my.
Wait, no, 4, sorry.
Like a book. They always said to me I should write a book. If I started writing a book, I wouldn't know where to start because there something else would come up in my mind. I'd say, oh, I left that out. I'd be going back and filling in pages for things. But there's been seeing the changes in attitudes and just the new regulations and all this. It just, all it does is create dissension and people and makes people bigots, and you just don't know who you can trust anymore, and it's tragic. It really is. And I say, we live in a country. People want to come here, but why are they being picayune about certain other religions? I mean, what's that got to do with living with a person who is of a different nationality? I mean, I don't understand it. We have an idiot as president. We really do. The man is so possessed of being, I think he's so insecure and wants to build his own image up. I think that he is.
Are you talking about Donald Trump or Barack Obama?
Yes, I am. Donald Trump. He is so insecure, and he's only trying to build up his own personal image, and the man is just on the wrong track. Just on the wrong track, believe me.
Yeah, he's really kind of split the nation because a lot of people like him and then a lot of people don't like him.
I know, but I'm hoping, I'm praying that he doesn't turn us upside down in this country, really. He's making a lot of enemies along. He's just only been there 10 days, and he's already got people all in an uproar trying to send back. People have been flying to this country, have visas and all that, and now the airports were just jammed. If you have watched anything on the news or on television lately, the airports are all jammed with people that they won't let go where they were supposed to be going. They have visas and have green cards, and he wants everybody screened to make sure we're not getting some threat into our country. I think it's just, you can't just pull this out of the air and make it happen. I mean, it's insane. It just is. I don't usually get into politics because that's not my thing, but I just think that we have the wrong man as president. No, that's it.
Yeah, well, it is what it is now, I guess.
I know.
So.
Yeah. So, anyway, well, I hope you got
thanks so much,
information.
Yeah,
awesome.
Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, good luck with your grade on that.
Yeah, he'll let you know how he does. Thanks
okay.
so much. We love you.
Love
yeah,
you.
Love you, too. Yeah.
Love.
How's Abby? Okay? Do you know it?
Avi's doing pretty good. She still is having her Neupogen shots.
Yeah. Well, that's is essential to her health, so I guess that's what you have to do when you have health issues. I wish you all the best, okay?
And you too.
Thanks, Grammy.
Okay,
love
honey.
You.
Love you. Okay, honey. Bye-bye.
Bye.